Welcome to The Talk at Revolution, where each week we explore what it looks like to find Jesus and live like Him in a practical way. At Revolution Community Church, we know that we are better together. Each week, we look to celebrate Jesus, connect with others, and contribute to the church, community, and beyond. If you'd like to connect with Revolution or take a next step, please visit us at revolutioncc.org or at our Logansport, Indiana campus, located at 3930 East Market Street. And now, we hope you are encouraged and challenged by this talk.
All right, so here it is, week two. We started this journey last week, and we're continuing today. And before we kind of dive into week two of Make Room, I want to say we're kind of entering the fall here in a few weeks, and you know, school's reopening, and different things are happening. And so we're starting to encourage life groups to start meeting consistently again. And I know some groups continue through the summer in different ways, but we want you to really think about getting in a group this fall. We're going to do a life group commissioning at some point, and as groups get kind of kickstarted, restarted, think about joining a group. And actually, one of the groups at Revolution that is starting back this Tuesday that is an open group is our men's life group. So I know Matt Mead is somewhere in the room, but there he is right there. Find him if you want to connect with that, guys in the room or guys online in the North Central Indiana area that want to connect in a group. They're going to meet Tuesday night. So yeah, get in a group. Think about that as we unroll some things moving forward. So I heard this interesting statement this week, and I don't know who to give credit to for it, but so it's anonymous, but I just want to start with this idea here. It says, we preach best what we need to learn most. And I want to share that because I've been preaching now for 18 years. I've been in ministry since August 2002, and I was actually corrected because yesterday I said that my wife and I will celebrate 17 years of marriage in October of this year. No, it's 18 years of marriage. So I'm corrected. Don't want to get that wrong, but you know, also 18 years of ministry this month, and so which is just crazy, almost half of my life. But I would say after preaching 18 years, this is correct. So today's talk should be some of the best preaching you've ever heard from me, because I can't think of many things that I need to grow in more than this make room practice we're going to talk about today called prayer. If there is such a thing as an expert in prayer, I'm somewhere between rookie and novice. This is not PhD graduate Anthony coming to you with all that I've learned. This is like fellow below average student hoping to squeak out with a B minus, going to do the extra credit just in case. You know, so I'm learning right here with you. We'll see if we can learn something together today. And let me just catch you up real quick. If you did miss last week, again, this is week two. So last week we talked about a practice that directly connects with today, actually. We talked about fasting last week, and everybody left so excited and so fired up, and let's fast, let's do this. Yeah, okay, one person was anyway. But we talked about this practice, and what we did, we looked at all these Old Testament stories of these different individuals and groups of people and nations even, that they committed themselves to fasting and prayer, and God showed up, and breakthrough happened in people's lives, and spiritual renewal came to the people. It's just amazing. So we looked through these Old Testament stories, and then we ended with Jesus, and we saw how Jesus, before he started his ministry, he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights, it says. Before he ever preached a sermon, before he ever called a disciple, before he ever asked anyone to follow him, as far as we know, before any of those things happened, he spent 40 days fasting in the wilderness. And within all that we talked about, we discovered how fasting forges humility. We talked about how fasting is a practice that facilitates this work of humility in our lives. And there's so much more we talked through last week. If you missed last week and you haven't caught up online, you can go back and watch the video, or the podcast is updated as well. Because these three practices that we're looking at, they just go so, they go together so much. So today, we looked at a lot of stories last week. We're going to look at one story today. And one story that happened after Jesus went back to be with his Father in heaven. And if you want to turn there, you can. We're actually going to pretty much stay in this chapter all morning or whenever you're watching this, all afternoon, evening. We're going to stay in Acts chapter 12. So if you got a physical Bible or a Bible app, feel free to pull that up. We're going to be in that chapter. And it's a story, the fifth book of the New Testament, by the way. It's a story of Peter, this disciple of Jesus, and a small church in the city of Jerusalem. And let me say this, for those that struggle believing what the gospel stories say about Jesus, like if you struggle believing that, Jesus was actually divine, like God's son sent to save the world, Peter, the life of Peter provides so much evidence of these claims, that Jesus was sent by God, divine. Because Peter denied Jesus multiple times, denied Jesus, he was a coward. He turned his back on Jesus. He did not want to be associated with Jesus in fear that he might be killed just like Jesus was killed. He was a coward. But then something happens in history that totally revolutionizes Peter's life. Turns him from coward to courage, to a man of courage. And the only thing that makes sense to see a turnaround that drastic is the event that is recorded in all four gospel accounts of Jesus' life, the resurrection. That Jesus was dead, and 3 days later, he rose from the grave, and the resurrection of Jesus turned Peter, this disciple, from a coward to a man of courage. There was no doubt in Peter's mind that Jesus was who he said he was, sent by God to save the world, because Jesus saw his friend die and then rise from the grave, beat death. And then later in the story, we're going to read one of those stories today, he was willing to risk everything for Jesus, his very life. Because of what he saw happen. And if you saw what Peter saw, you'd be the same way, ready to risk everything for Jesus, the Son of God, the one that came to gave everything for us. So here's the story. This is one of the stories of Peter where he's just bold in his faith. It's Acts 12. If you haven't turned there, of course, it's going to be right here on the screen. So it says, it was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. And this happened all throughout the book of Acts. These followers of Jesus risked their lives to follow him. So Herod had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this was met with approval, that hey, the people are good with this, King Herod proceeded to seize Peter also, and this happened during the festival of unleavened bread. And after arresting Peter, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. And Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So, in case you're wondering, this is not a good situation, okay? Peter has been arrested for his faith in Jesus. The same guy, King Herod, that just killed his buddy James, has now arrested him. He's in maximum security, four squads of four guards, and there's rumors of other punishment that's coming, okay? This is not a good situation. And here, verse 5, this is the key verse of the story. We're actually going to come back to verse 5 later. Let's read the entire verse together. Verse 5. Let's read this. Ready? So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. So we're going to come back to this verse, but we got to see what happens, okay? It's such a good story. You ready for a good story? Somebody over here was good with fasting. We're ready for a good story. Here we go. So verse 6. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers bound with two chains, and sentries stood guard at the entrance. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord, think about this story, appeared and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. "Quick, get up," the angel said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrist. Then the angel said to him, "Put on your clothes and sandals," and Peter did so. "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me," the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but he had no idea that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. Have you ever been in a situation where, like, you're having a dream and you're not sure if it's really a dream or if it's really happening or whatever? It's like so vivid. And so Peter's in this quandary, like, is this really happening or is it not? Like, I still remember, it's been several years ago now, I had a dream and it was so real. I was for sure it was happening. I was convinced the emotions were like, all the endorphins were firing. I thought for sure that I had won the lottery. Have you ever had a dream like that? And like, you just get so excited. You think it's really happening and then you wake up and like, what the? Serious? You try to go back to sleep and can't go, but anyway. So Peter's like, is this really happening? Is it not? So continuing on the story, so the angel, you know, is leading him out of the prison. It says they passed the first and second guards and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. And then Peter came to himself and said, and so he like rubs his eyes and he's like, oh my gosh, that really happened. So he says, now I know without a doubt that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches, from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen. Now, if that's an amazing part of the story. Here's where it gets really good and actually kind of funny. So when this had dawned on him that all this stuff that just had just happened, like the angel led him to freedom, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. And remember, we read in verse 5, they were praying for him, right? The church was praying to God for Peter. And this, as this miracle happens, as the angel leads him to safety, and now he's at the house of, you know, Mary, Mark, or whatever, like, they're still praying for him. Okay, that's really important in the story. They are still praying for Peter. So verse 13, Peter knocked at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening it and exclaimed, Peter's at the door. And I just love the imagery of this. Like, Rhoda goes out, somebody's knocking on the door, Rhoda's like, who is it? And Peter's like, it's me. And she recognizes his voice, so she doesn't even open the door. She just runs back in. It's like, you're never going to guess who's at the door. Peter's at the door. And look at this. Now, remember what they're doing right now? What is this church doing right now? Praying. Praying for what? For Peter, for his freedom from prison, for his protection and stuff. And the peeps in the prayer meeting, when Rhoda comes in, Peter's at the door, they're like, you're out of your mind, Rhoda. You're out of your mind, they told her. When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, well, they started like logically thinking, so it must be an angel then? Meanwhile, but Peter kept on knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Now, I got to stop here because this is so relatable to how I pray sometimes. And I don't know if you'll connect with this or not. Maybe this is just to me, this part right here. But they are praying for Peter's protection and freedom. I mean, we read it all together, right? They're praying to God for Peter. They are earnestly praying to God for Peter. We know for sure because verse 12 tells us that they are actually, when Peter shows up and starts knocking on the door, they are still praying to God for Peter. Yet when the answer to their prayer shows up at the door, they don't even believe it at first. And when the evidence is too much to deny it, because Peter is staring them in the face, they are astonished, it says. Which to me says, man, their faith in this prayer was kind of low. And yet God answers their prayer anyway, which is so encouraging to me. God chooses to answer our prayers despite our level of faith sometimes. And that's so encouraging because how many times have we prayed a prayer and we didn't believe anything was going to happen as a result of that prayer? I think the Western church, and I put myself in this statement, like we have a very low view on the power of prayer. Right now, many of us are thinking, that's a great story we just read in Acts chapter 12. I'm not sure stories like that happen anymore. Even though Jesus gave us so many promises related to prayer, like Jesus, the one we follow. Let me just show you a few examples of these statements Jesus made about our prayers. He says, whatever you ask in my name, that I will do so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you ask me anything in my name, I will do it. It's pretty bold. Next chapter in John, he says something similar. He actually says this three times in this chapter. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, it will be done for you. And then Matthew, another eyewitness to these events and stuff, he quotes Jesus as saying this, and all things you ask in prayer, believing, you will receive. Now, I'm not a name it, claim it kind of guy. I don't say, like, Jesus is not a genie in a bottle that we make wishes to and he grants our wishes. But Jesus made some really bold claims about the power of prayer and how he responds to our prayers. And there's lots more we could go into with that. But despite these bold claims, sometimes we just lob language into the atmosphere and we don't even think about what we're saying. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. You know, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, whoever eats the fastest gets the most. You know, I mean, we just say these prayers. And we even put disclaimers at the end of our prayers oftentimes. Like, God, if it be thy will, if it be thy will for this to happen, like, what kind of opt-out clause is that? Or we just pray for people because we think it's the loving thing to do, like, hey, praying for your brother. And like, we will pray for them because we think, you know, it'll encourage it, but we don't really think God's going to do anything based on our prayers for them or whatever. We're not convinced it's going to do much. And even with sincere prayers, many times, there's just like little faith in what we're praying about. And again, maybe I'm just preaching to me, but we're not convinced it's really going to do much. So what we want to do today, I want to give us four things. Like, these are practical things we can get from the statement we read in Acts chapter 12, verse 5. Four things that I think if we can learn these things and grow in these things, it can really help us with our faith in prayer in this practice, and our belief in this practice, and our living out of this practice. And I would encourage you, if you have a piece of paper and a pen, maybe write this down. Or if you have a note app, like, pull that up on the phone. And so we're going to put verse 5 back up here. And this is the statement we're going to focus on. We're going to get four things from this statement. So let's read it one more time, just the underlined part. But the church was earnestly praying to God for him. So we're going to get four things we're going to pull out of this phrase. So write that down if you have something to write it down, or put it in the note app, maybe, or maybe take a picture of the screen. And the first thing, it comes from the first three words here, okay? But the church. But the church. And I said this last week with fasting. I'm going to say it again with prayer. There is something about people coming together to pray. There is something about, like, a group of people committing themselves to praying for a day, a week, a season, like joining together in prayer. There is something about the church praying. And we call this corporate prayer. That's the name we've given to this, corporate prayer. You write the words corporate prayer above but the church. If you've got this written down, but the church, corporate prayer. See, the first century church believed in this so much. The first century church exploded with growth and changed the entire world because they had a belief that the most powerful force in the universe is God's people joined together in prayer. I mean, read the book of Acts. It's the story of the early church. It's in 28 chapters. We got 7 days between, you know, now and next Sunday, 3 chapters a day, just like the Psalms. Read the entire book of Acts, and it's story after story of the power of prayer. Acts chapter 2, the church actually launches out of a prayer meeting. Read it. The very first miracle recorded in the book of Acts, Peter and John are on their way to a prayer meeting. And then we got Acts chapter 12 and many other different stories. And continue going through the centuries, and like every great movement of God that I've ever heard about started with a group of people that began to lay hold of what's true about prayer. You can look at the Wesley brothers, Jonathan Edwards, the Welch Revival, the Reformation, the Great Awakenings. You can go to different parts of the world today. There is power in corporate prayer and joining together. And I'm actually going to give us a corporate prayer challenge at the end of the service today. Gave us one last week. We're going to get another one this week. We're going to take some steps into a bigger challenge. So hang with me on that. And we're working through some things in this area of corporate prayer right now. Some rhythms for our church. Because one of the things moving forward for Revolution that I want our church to be known for, like, as people look at Revolution, I want them to know we do church different and we imagine 320 and we're better together and all that. But I want people that know anything about us to know we are a church of prayer and fasting. As we move forward, that's my hope for Revolution. That's my hope for my life. So let's put Acts 12, 5 back on the screen. But the church, so corporate prayer, was earnestly praying. So underline that or circle it or, you know, highlight that, was earnestly praying. And I want to spend a couple minutes on this because I think this is really important to note. And so let me show you one other place. There's actually a time where Jesus is praying, and the same descriptive word is used within one of Jesus' prayers. Let me show you that. It's Luke 22, and maybe you've heard this before. And being in anguish, he, this is Jesus, prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. This is when Jesus, he's praying in the garden the night before his crucifixion, and he is getting real with God. He even says, God, Dad, if this cup can pass, but not my will, you know, kind of surrenders to God. It's this idea of focused intent and passion in our prayer. coming to God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, everything within you. God, I am earnestly crying out. The word earnestly, it means this: with sincere and intense conviction. Seriously and consistently. Seriously and consistently praying. Let me illustrate it like this. If you're a parent, maybe you'll connect with this. If you're a parent that has kids that are grown or maybe older, or maybe even young kids, you've experienced this. Have you ever had a kid get really sick and had to pray for that child? When Jake, our middle child, our oldest boy, was 2 or 3, he contracted rotavirus, and it hit him like a ton of bricks. And Jake's always been a little dude, and he could not keep anything in his system. That's all I'll say. He could not keep it, and he was just continuing to lose weight. 4 and 5 days in, he looked like if you looked at him, he looked like he was going to die. He could not keep anything in his system. We rushed him to the emergency room. They, of course, hooked him up to IVs, kept him overnight. And so when Jacob was going through this, we didn't just throw out some nonchalant prayer like, God, if it be your will, according to your sovereign plan, if you could touch our son. No. We're like, God, we have to have you show up. God, please heal Jacob. Where are you at, God? We need you to show up right now and touch the body of our son. Right now, God. I don't know if you relate to that at all. Earnest prayer. See, even though this church praying for Peter may have lacked in the faith department, they made up for it in the earnest department. And I've confessed some of my struggles with prayer today. I feel like this is maybe one area I do pretty good in. I don't know how to not pray in earnest prayer. I just get real with God and just tell him where I'm at. And if you're new to prayer or new to praying in this way, I would just encourage you, here's a great place to start. Read the Psalms as prayers. We just did the Psalms of the Summer journey, over the summer months, and we read through the Psalms. Like there's so many different types of earnest prayers in the Psalms. There's complaining prayers, crying out prayers, clarifying prayers, comforting prayers, confessing prayers, courageous prayers, so many prayers. So just like start to read a Psalm and say, God, this is my prayer, and read the Psalm as a prayer. It's a great way to get started. Here's something else that goes with this praying earnest prayers. There's nothing you shouldn't pray about. If you think about something, pray about that something. If you're worried about something, pray about it. If you talk to a friend about it, talk to God about it. There's nothing off limits. Earnest prayers. We are crying our heart out to him. We are earnestly praying. But the church, corporate prayer, was earnestly praying, seriously and consistently, right? Earnestly praying to God. So if you wrote it down, again, highlight, circle, box in, to God. It's just two words. But these are two words we can't miss. That when we pray, we have the ear of the God of the universe. We miss that sometimes. When we pray, we are approaching the throne of the same God that a couple thousand years ago heard the faithless yet earnest prayers of a small house church in Jerusalem and sent an angel to rescue their friend out of prison. That same God is the God that we have the ear of every moment of every single day. And yet I still pray prayers like, God be with me today. or God keep me safe today. What kind of prayer is that for God? Like I was praying over Bentley on Thursday, and it just came out because I'm going through this and working through it myself, and I prayed a prayer that I don't think I'd ever prayed over Bentley, and he laughed when I prayed it. I said, God, make him dangerous. And he just started laughing about it. And then his principal came up to me after first service and said he jumped off the playground on Friday and hurt himself. I'm kidding, he didn't do that. But God, God don't make us safe. Make us dangerous for you. We need some dangerous people right now, willing to risk everything like Peter was for the gospel of Christ. God, make us dangerous. We're following to God. Like our prayers are to God. And here's the last two words of the verse. But the church corporate prayer was earnestly praying to God for him. Here's the last thing. Write the word specific in there. If you've got that statement down, write the word specific. They are praying a specific prayer. And again, I think sometimes we pray things like, oh God, whatever your will is, whatever you want to see happen. And sometimes that's fine. I think that's fine. But I think God, our loving Father, is saying, tell me what you want to see happen. What's your hope for the situation that you're in right now? What's the dream you have for your kids? What's the character trait that you want me to develop in your heart right now? What do you want to see happen? Pray specifically. I don't know if anything grows our faith more than praying a specific prayer and seeing God specifically answer that prayer. Someone came up to me after first service, this is true, and said they told this story this week. They fasted 4 days this week for something specific, and it happened on Thursday. They prayed specifically, and man, you could just tell their faith was like up here. Specific prayers. So I was really convicted by this. I wrote 6 specific prayers down this week, a prayer for myself, my wife, our 3 kids, and our church. A very specific prayer. It's in my note, like it pops up every morning now. I've done it 3 days. This is my 3rd day of praying these 6 specific prayers. What are those things? What are those 6 things? What are those things that you need to pray over your life specifically? That you need to pray over your kids specifically, your grandkids specifically, your workplace specifically, your school specifically? God, this is what I want to see you do. So we're going to go into this time again where we're just going to make some room to allow God to work in this second practice of prayer. Like, we can do this right now. How cool is that? We can live this practice out right now. Our prayer room is going to open for those that want to join corporately with someone, join with someone in prayer. So the prayer room is going to open. In a few moments, we're going to take communion together again this week. Should have the wafer and the cup at your chair. If you're watching online, just go grab something out of the fridge, or maybe if you're watching this on demand, pause it, come back later, you know, once you've got some stuff to kind of enjoy this time of communion with us. So let's just right now, like, make a little room through prayer. God, pray we'd all take a breath right now. Maybe it's taken 40, 45 minutes to get to this point where we can actually breathe you in the weeks over here to the side now. The worries are over here to the side, at least for now. And God, we just want to make room for you. We want you to speak. We're asking these specific things for you to do. So God, just do what you want to do in this time we have together. In Jesus' name.